You're listening to Phoenix 98 FM, and that was It's Okay by Sam Brown, and I'm joined now by Sam Brown. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Gareth. Lovely to be here.
Thank you very much for your time today. So we're going to have a quick chat about you and go back to the very beginning and then come through to modern day and talk about the new album. So we just played It's Okay from that, and we'll talk a bit more about that. So both of your parents, musicians, was it always inevitable that that music was going to be a path that you were going to follow?
Yes, I think it was, is the short answer. I used to work with my mum, and obviously the house was always full of musicians. And I loved singing. Songwriting was the thing that I kind of got into first, to be honest.
Okay.
That was my sort of first love. And then sort of started going out with my mum to sessions and ended up getting roped into a couple of backing vocals and absolutely loved it and just loved singing. And so, yes, I think it probably was inevitable in lots of ways.
Okay. I mean, you mentioned backing vocals. I think I read somewhere that your first sort of major backing vocals, Small Faces, when you were sort of about 14. I mean, that's a fairly huge first gig for that kind of thing. I mean, I take it with your upbringing, you were always surrounded by musicians though. So,
yeah, I mean, Dad had one of the first recording studios, I think, in England. It was one of the first multi-track recording studios, out probably, you know, the BBC and stuff like that. So he had a lot of people coming to the studio, and Steve Marriott was a really good friend of Mum and Dad's and had been for years. So I'd met Steve, and so when the Small Faces album came up, then, you know, I'd already known him for a few years by then. So Mum said, well, Sam can come and do backing vocals. And he was like, yeah, that'd be great. And that's how it came about. But they were a really nice bunch of people, the Faces, just really lovely, very down to earth. And I'd met them all, obviously, beforehand. So yeah. Good thing to do.
Yeah, I can imagine. Without that, being a 14-year-old going to a studio of very famous people would have been perhaps a little bit overwhelming. But,
when you're a kid, though, you know, I didn't have anything to sort of hold it up against as a comparison, if you know what I mean. So they were just people to me, and they were just musicians. So I didn't really think about the fact that they were famous. That didn't occur to me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does, very much so. So fast forwarding a lot, I mean, you did sort of, and I'd like to talk a bit more about sort of the backing vocals thing in a little bit, but you fast forward to 1988, your first solo album, Stop, global success, top 10 in many countries, number one in quite a few. Just before we started talking, we were saying that it's sort of the 70s and 80s feel like a long time ago, and 35 years since sort of the Stop album came out. I mean, what do you remember about that time and the success and that side of things?
Well, I think, a lot of hard work went into making it a success. And I suppose I realised that, you know, promoting a record was very different. It was a whole new world to me, you know, promotion and talking to people and going abroad to go on radio stations and television shows abroad. So it was a really new world for me, because it didn't in some ways have much to do with music. It was more about marketing. Okay. So that was something very new. But I really enjoyed it. You know, I met lots of different people, and they were all lovely, and they were all working on my record. So, you know, I was very grateful to them, really. I did that. I did PR for 3 years solid with Stop. And I think that the record company really did make it a success, you know. So particularly the people in Holland and Belgium, they were amazing. They were the ones who kicked it off, really.
Okay. But despite becoming, a globally successful solo artist, you continue to perform as a backing vocalist as well. I mean, the list of artists that you sort of did backing vocals for is mind-blowing, really. I mean, and to name a few, Pink Floyd, George Harrison, Tina Turner, Gary Moore, Jules Holland, Dexys Midnight Runners, and that's just a tiny list. I'm assuming it was something you loved doing. I mean, but must have been very different from, I mean, you say that the Stop album and everything was very much PR, and I suppose this was pure singing, but I mean, what was it about backing vocals that kept you doing it?
If I ever got my voice back and someone said to me, you can only do one aspect of singing, it would be backing vocals, because it is such a fantastic musical experience to sing with other people, in harmony with other people. There's nothing like it. It's fantastic. And I think, you know, nowadays you don't get it all that much, but it used to be. I mean, Mum and I we'd have a session at 10 to 1 o'clock, then we'd have a session with someone else in London, 2 to 5, then you'd go somewhere else for 6 to 9, and then sometimes you'd have another session 10 to 1 in the morning. It was really, you know, everybody, there was a lot of backing vocal work, and I did that for a long time, and I just loved it. It was great, because every place you went to, it was different people, it was different music, you know, you just kind of learned it, you know, on the fly. Yeah. And you just recorded it. So it was just about doing backing vocals is something that I mean I never gave it up. I did BVs with Jules for years as yep. well, slightly different because I was doing lead as well, but and also I wasn't working with two other singers. But, you know, I just love it. I love backing vocals, and they are very overlooked, I think, sometimes, backing vocalists.
Yeah, I agree. And it can make a record if you get the right backing vocals list, definitely, 100%. And yeah, as a fan of yours, you know, sort of on later when Jules was playing, when you used to every now and then pop up in the backing vocalists, it was always like this. And it was, yeah, as I said, it's something... Yeah, I've got to try not to fanboy too much. I'm sorry. So, we're going to take a break now, and I am going to play a track from that era. I am going to play the title track from the Stop album, probably the song that got me into you back in the 80s. So we'll play that now, and I'll have a bit more of a chat after that.
You've given me you never worry that I come to depend on you? I gave you all the love I had in me. Now I find you lied, and I can't believe it's true. Wrapped in her arms, I see you across the street.
I see you across the street.
And I can't help but wonder if she knows what's going on. Oh, you talk of love, but you don't know how it feels. When you realize that you're not the only one. To walk away.
I tried to walk away,
but it's not that easy when your soul is torn in two. So I just resign myself to it every day. Now all I can do is to leave it up to you.
Back with Sam Brown now. That was Stop, released back in 1988. You went on to release six studio albums between sort of 88 and 2007. And I'm fast forwarding for the sake of time. I mean, I could ask you loads of questions about all of those albums. There's massive highlights for me. I mean, I've been lucky enough to see you perform a few times over the years, and I'll talk about that as well. But 2007 came and life threw you what I suppose can only be called a massive curveball, and you started to have problems with your voice. I mean, how did that start to manifest itself, and what happened, I suppose?
Well, I was touring. I probably, to be fair, was a bit of a workaholic. I was always working, and I loved it because I loved singing. You know, I loved singing more than anything, except for my children. and my marriage broke down. I was working a lot, and we were living up in Scotland. And it was just a very difficult time. You know, it was hard work. It was very emotional. And I was still working through that, and often had my kids with me as well. So in 2006, in the middle of 2006, I just noticed it was hard to sort of hit the pitch just dead on. You know, I had to just think about pushing up to the note. And it just went on from there, really, and it got worse. And at the beginning of 2007, I had to cancel all my work. And so I stopped singing. And that was that. That was 15 years ago, you know. So nearly 16 years ago, in fact. And I tried everything. I went to see specialists. Had a couple of operations on my voice to remove polyps. And went to America, saw people in America. Tried everything, really. Diet, hypnotism, hypnotherapy.
Okay.
You name it, I've tried it, really. And the other thing is, which I think people don't realise, is I did a lot of voice training by then. So in 1995, after Pink Floyd, I had my second child. And I think that the sort of workload of having children and continuing to work got on top of me, and I really did completely lose my voice. So I started to do voice training, and that was a complete revelation to me. I absolutely loved it. So, because people say, well, you've got a very loud voice and, you know, this, that and the other. But I actually did go into doing a lot of voice training, and I was very disciplined about it. So it wasn't that. I mean, I definitely through my marriage breakup, I did sort of channel all my emotion through my singing.
Okay.
And I think it's possible that did sort of just break my voice.
Mm.
But it's led me on to different things, and I've loved writing this new album and being creative again. It hasn't been an easy process learning to sing something and then auto tune it, so it's not a kind of natural flow. But I've loved the writing. I've loved working with Danny Shoger. I love working with my brother again. And so it's been just a really fantastic thing to do, just to be able to get back to being creative, even if it is without my voice, has been a fantastic thing.
And what convinced you to get back in the saddle and everything? Because it must have been incredibly difficult going through all of that, losing something that's so important to you. And after so long, actually going, right, we can do this.
Well, it was Danny, really. He sort of, we got in touch and we had a chat. It was in lockdown. And of course, as everybody did, we had more time on our hands. So we started to just write every Tuesday. And that was it, really. After we did two or three songs, which was sort of all right. And we continued to write. And then I thought, well, I'm just going to put this into auto tune and see what it sounds like.
Okay.
So I was managing to sort of sing them in tune. But when I put it into Melodyne, it just suddenly really came alive. And it was like, actually, the songs are good and this works. So, you know, we could actually make an album. And that was really the point at which it became a serious venture rather than, let's just try a bit of writing, you know. So then it became exciting.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. I mean, and the reaction's been really, really positive. I mean, I've seen some brilliant reviews. I mean, Classic Pop, I seem to remember a really good review there, some others. I mean, how does it feel to be back? I mean, that's...
Well, I've got to be honest, Gareth, I never, ever got this positive a reaction from... I never had that from any of my albums. It's been mind-blowing. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how positive the reaction has been. People seem to genuinely love it. Now, whether that's because I haven't done anything for ages or because I've lost my voice and people thought I would never make an album again, I don't know why. Or maybe they just really do like the album. And that's what it feels like. It's just had such a positive reaction. It's very different to anything I've ever done before. It's quite quite well. Have you listened to it?
I've listened to it online. I've ordered my copy from the website, and so I've not had a chance to put it on and listen to it in the way that I like to listen to music. Quite often, sort of put the CD on and lose myself in it. But no, I have listened to it all online, definitely.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's very different. I think it's quite commercial. It's quite 80s. It's the bit of electronica. I mean, people have drawn a number of comparisons, which are too many to even go into at the moment. But it seems to inspire different ideas in different people. But it's just, I have had a really good reaction to it. I did think that some people, particularly my fans, might not like it because there's sort of spoken word on it and it is incredibly different to anything I've done before.
It very much is, but it's still... Despite that, it's still very you, and that's sort of your personality is definitely still within it. And you know, for your fans, I think that, I mean, that's and speaking as one of those, I think that's a big part of it as well. It might be different, but you're definitely still there. I mean, that's now it's a difficult question to ask because I'm sure it's a hard answer to give. I mean, but and I said earlier, I've been lucky enough to see you at live numerous times over the years. I think the first time was 1990 at the Clipse Pavilion. I remember seeing you at the Borderline with Herbie Flowers on bass and everything. So, I mean, I've seen you in big venues, small venues and all sorts. I mean, how much is not being able to perform live? How much does that hurt, I suppose? I mean, it's...
It does, but it's been a long time since I lost my voice. And I think, you know, I mean, there have been nights where I've had a couple of glasses of wine and gone down a bit of a wormhole on YouTube. You know, I mean, I don't particularly like watching myself that much, but I think I definitely grieved losing my voice. Mm. I went through that. And it's just one of those things. And I've been lucky enough to have done some fantastic things, all of which I can see and other people can see and are recorded or filmed.
Yeah.
So, you know, the only thing that isn't really is my live shows. And I suppose that is a bit sad in a way. But on the other hand, I think nowadays everything is filmed and documented. And in some ways, I quite like the fact that it's just an experience that some people have and some people haven't. And that's just how it is. You know, it's like photo taking. Well, it used to be like taking photographs. I've toured a lot. But I didn't always take photos because I thought, well, I will remember being here and I'll remember seeing this. And I do. So whilst it's not a very modern attitude, I sort of think that's just how it is. I've done those shows. I've performed in so many different guises and I'm lucky to have done that. I really feel lucky to have done that and privileged to have worked with the people I've worked with. And I genuinely feel that. And I don't really feel like I've lost anything in a way. I mean, I have. I'd love to be able to sing again, but I can't. And so what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
I'm not going to be weeping for the rest of my life. I teach ukulele now, and that's my job, and I love doing that. And I've met some great people doing that. So I'm really happy that I've found something that I can do, because that's the difficulty when you're a performer is, what do you do? I have no skills. I've got no qualifications, you know. So luckily I've found some people who like a ukulele teacher who swears a lot and terrible jokes.
Yeah, I was thinking back to live gigs and thinking you know, Adele's infamous for being a potty mouth, so to speak, on stage. And I thought, oh, well, Sam Brown had that well before Adele did.
Had that one sewn up.
Yeah, and very much so. So, yeah, the ukulele stuff is still ongoing, and that's, yeah, I mean, that really sort of exploded when you sort of started doing that. I mean, it's...
I don't know why. I mean, I thought people would just come for a few lessons and then go off once they'd learned how to play the ukulele, you know, but because there are lots of ukulele clubs out there that you can join locally to yourself, which you don't have to pay for. The difference is I charge people to come and they are taught, you know, so I will go through and we'll learn quite difficult things. But they keep coming back, thank goodness. And I love them all and I love them for supporting me. But also we have done some great things. So I think it's quite, it's an unusual situation in that I have a lot of experience in performance.
Yeah.
And doing music and writing songs. So that they get the benefit of that, and I get the benefit of their pension.
So, number 8, the new album, it's out now, released at the end of last month. It's gone down brilliantly. It finishes the Sam Brown sequence of albums, which I know you didn't know about until someone pointed it out to you and everything. Is that the end of the Sam Brown? Is that a full stop, or has this reawakened your love of making music in the new way that you're now making it, I suppose?
You're absolutely right. I will definitely be making more music. There's no way that that's the end. Although I think I might sort of veer off and not spell out any more names. So, yeah, I don't know which direction I'll go in. There's so much I want to do. You know, I'd love to do a ukulele album with my ute clubs, because that's just, even though they're amateur musicians, there's just some great people there and some real characters. So I'd really like to do that as a project.
Okay.
And I've started writing already. So, you know, who knows which direction it will go in.
Excellent. We're going to finish off now with the first single to be taken from the album. This is Sam Brown and Doll. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Gareth. It's been lovely.
Do you want me to look like a doll?